Ladies and gentlemen, get ready to embark on a journey like no other. Welcome to the Glum Lot Podcast,
your go-to destination for a unique blend of recovery and discovery.
I'm Brett.
And I'm Mark. And in this podcast, we will endeavor to create a safe and uplifting space for our guests and listeners to share their stories with sincerity and a touch of humor.
Remember, we are not a glum lot. The Glum Lot Podcast is more than just a source of entertainment. It's a beacon of hope, proving that even in the darkest moments, recovery is possible. Every story we share carries the power to inspire positive change.
So buckle up, get ready to listen, and join us in discovering the strength that lies within every individual's journey. This is the Glum Lot Podcast, where humor meets hope. All right, Brett, we are recording episode 20.
20.
Yes, and I just wanted to also mention, we just broke our first 1,500 downloads, which isn't bad for, what have you been, 3 weeks?
It's just about a month,
yeah.
But still.
Yeah, a little short of a month, so we're doing okay. And we are downloaded in over 7 countries.
All right.
I mentioned India and the Czech Republic are on board now.
Yeah, and I said 20 in Spanish, just in case we get one there, too.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm a forward-thinking man, you know.
6 in Great Britain, 5 in Ireland. And so, you know, it's spreading, and of course, the U.S.
Well, we just had our first guest on our Facebook page from Ireland.
Yeah.
That was pretty cool.
Nice.
Yeah. So if you're listening, we are excited that you're here.
Yeah. And we also have a Facebook group, the Glum Lot Podcast Facebook group. Join it.
Yeah.
We'll be glad you did.
Mm-hmm.
You might not be, but we will be.
That's correct.
So what's on your mind today?
So what's the saying? In life, there are good times and
bad times.
I would argue that that's not correct
once
we're in the program.
Okay.
So in sobriety, I would say there are good times and then there are growth times.
I've heard it also described as there are good times and challenging times.
Correct. But growth times, you know.
Okay.
Let's talk about that a little bit, you know, because I know every time that I would get in a little rut, and even in sobriety, that the world is against me. You know, if I hit 3 red lights in a row, that's God smiting me and telling me that, you know, he's got my number. It's just all those bullshit things.
Yeah, all the bullshit tapes playing in your head.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I also know that I grow at the speed of pain.
Oh, yes.
I do.
Yes.
And, you know, it's put in my path, and I've come to recognize these challenges as just that, challenges, and not slaps in the face from the universe.
Yeah.
You know, that in the end, I'm supposed to learn something. I'm supposed to grow, and I'll be better off.
Yeah, and I've said it before, I've had plenty of challenges this year, but being able to work through those and grow through those, that's helped me spread roots, so I'm a little bit more anchored, right?
Yeah.
When something goes wrong, I have a better root system for dealing with that instead of just going to the drink.
Well, yeah, and if not the drink, if you're not drinking, at least get off the pity pot because, you know, when you're in that headspace, everything sucks and you have no spiritual grounding and it usually kind of gets worse. You know what I mean?
It definitely gets worse.
And so you got to get out of your own way.
Yep.
You got to reconnect. And you know what really helps? And this used to piss me off. You need to make a gratitude list. Take your gratitude list and shove it up your ass.
Right.
But it really does work.
It certainly
does.
Because
it makes you take a look at everything and go, you know what? I have a good job. I have a good home.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sober. I have good sober friends.
I've gained.
Yeah. And then you're like, you know what? It's not so bad of a starting point from, you know, from one day at a time to start here.
Yeah.
You know, so anyways, we have a guest today who I think I've known since I was 5 years old, if I'm not mistaken.
Wow.
Yeah. And then I didn't see him for, Jesus, 35 years or something. And I was going to a rehab meeting, and I was walking into the meeting with somebody
last week
sponsoring. No, this was, I don't know, a year and a half ago. No. I was the outsider.
He was
walking in,
and
I'm like, holy shit, you know, small world. So without further ado, let's welcome Joe. Welcome to the Glum Lot Podcast, Joe.
Thanks, Mark and Brett. I'm grateful to be here. What a surprise, right?
Good. Yeah, nice. Hey, can we start with your sobriety date?
My sobriety date is 8-10-09, or August 10th, 2009, for those who are not math people.
That's right. And so let's start at the beginning. Do you remember your first drinks, your first buzz off of booze?
What it felt like, everything,
when it was, how old you were. Tell us everything.
We want to know.
I do. Actually, I was a freshman in high school. Not disclosing where I went to high school, but okay. I was the team manager for the varsity football team, and they had a big multi-keg party out to one of the players' camps, and I had never drank before.
And you were invited.
Oh, yeah, because I was part of the team.
And you were indoctrinated at that point?
Absolutely.
Do you remember what it felt like?
I remember falling off the stairs into the back of a friend of ours' Malibu full of apples from the orchard.
Jeez.
Wow.
Those are some details.
Yeah.
And so did you like it?
Yeah, until I puked all over God's creation.
Applesauce.
It was horrifying.
Yeah, really?
Oh, no. Yeah, I didn't drink
so
for
was
a
your
long
first,
time.
Yo, really? So
yo,
your
no.
First, your yep. first impression was that this I'm not doing that again?
No, why would I ever do that again?
Yeah. So the next time you did it. How long in between was it?
I'm thinking about 16, right? Probably junior in high school. Started, drinking beer. And
by now, things have probably changed a little bit in the way that you're drinking.
Yeah, well, I mean, I was just getting started, bro.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, yeah.
You know, as the story goes down the end, who could drink without doing cocaine in my world? But that's a whole other game.
Okay.
We'll get to that.
Yeah. So your drinking progressed from there, right?
Yeah, we started doing some weekend stuff, and well, then I graduated from high school. I was 17, and I got out in June, and I started playing softball 5 nights a week.
And that's always
18 was the drinking age. I'm 17, and I'm strolling around going, "Oh man, my lord!"
I can't even imagine that because I wasn't that. You know,
yeah,
it was 21 ever since I've known it.
And also, softball is a huge drink event, huge beer event, right?
It's a fact.
So you're playing 5 nights a week?
Yeah, and weekends.
So are you drinking after every game?
Absolutely.
So you became a daily.
Oh, yeah.
And you were one of the guys.
Part of what it's the norm, right? You go to work, you go to the game, you drink in a parking lot, you go to the sponsor, you drink there, and everybody else leaves, and you go to the after-hours party.
Okay. And so it didn't seem weird to you at all, right?
No, that was the norm.
Yeah, very normal, right? So at some point, cocaine enters the picture for you, right?
That is correct.
How long into your drinking was that?
I was 25 when I did my first line.
Okay. And what was your reaction to that whole thing?
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh. I like this too much.
Well, yeah. We used to call it crush spine because you could just, you do one of those and your spine straighten up and you can go for another day.
Yep. Grind your teeth, the whole nine yards.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. I remember that, too.
Mm-hmm.
And so... what about your alcohol? How did that progress, your drinking during this time?
It just went hand in hand.
Yeah. So the more you drank, the more Coke you did, the more you drank.
Absolutely.
The more Coke you did, the more Coke, you know.
Yeah.
And so were you one of these guys that does multi-day, no sleep, binge?
Yeah. I'm actually only 45 years old in real life because I only had 300 days in my year.
Yeah. things got cut down.
Was it like that right from the get-go, though?
No, I mean, right? We all started out just pooling a little bit of funds, and then to get a little more, well, the next thing you know is you continue to go up the Richter scale. I mean, the next thing you know, it was just crazy, right? Guys are dropping off prepackaged 8 Ziploc bags of them.
Yeah.
And they come back 8 days later and say, give us the money you got, and here's more.
Yeah.
Right? I can't get off the merry-go-round at this point.
And how old were you at this point? 25, you said, when you first did it.
Well, yeah, but it didn't get ramped up until probably 30.
Yeah.
Well, obviously, as we,
And so in between that 25 and 30, when it's getting ramped up, any repercussions from drinking and doing coke?
Not yet.
Okay.
That infamous not yet.
Yes.
It's coming.
Tell me about it.
It's coming to a theater near you.
That's pretty good, though, getting to 30 without any real stuff. That's...
Well, I was... The area I live in, let's just say I was protected.
I see.
In softball, I played with a lot of different people that had some influence in what happens in your outcome, I guess you
might say. So you got out of a lot of stuff.
I made phone calls to individuals at 2:30 in the morning when their buddies had me pulled over and literally handed them my cell phone and said, hey, I got a friend of yours on the phone.
You know what? And that was back in the day when you could get away with
it. Oh, yeah.
Now they're like, I don't care who the fuck's on the phone.
Right.
They're right.
You know? So hence the story on, you know, what happened, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I was ripping along. I mean, my goal was to just party till I was 50 and die because I thought life was over at 50.
Okay.
And just to kind of back it up, right? I'm a spoiled, rotten only child out of the block. So I'm used to self and everything going my way. And when it didn't go my way, I made it go my way. And if by some chance it didn't, I ruined it for everyone.
Nice.
That's how I roll.
Some manipulation. Yeah.
I'm the guy you didn't want around, but I'm the guy you wanted around just for what I was toting around, right?
Yeah,
you know, there's pluses and minuses.
So
everything.
You're getting warnings along the way, right?
Oh, yeah.
And so you know you got to be careful and you're trying to manage it.
Absolutely.
At some point, is it become unmanageable for you?
It's way unmanageable already. I just don't know it, right?
Yeah, right.
All right, so as the story goes, it was actually a Saturday, and I stopped at a local tavern. I had 2 beers and a shot, went home, and I was headed for an off-track betting establishment.
Okay. Can do a little gambling.
Which happened to have a local college near it. So I threw an 8 in my pocket, hit a 2-gram crush vial because I didn't want to mess around. I don't have time for that.
Here I go again. What is an 8-ball? Sorry for everybody.
That would be 3.5 grams of cocaine.
Okay, in a crushed what?
A crushed vial, 2 grams glass vial, where you crush it up and put it in there so you don't have to do any work.
Okay.
You don't have to cut it up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
It's pre-work.
It's a beautiful thing.
Well, then, due to the fact I didn't want to come back, I threw another one in my pocket.
Okay.
So now I've had 3 or 4 beers, whatever, and I'm driving, and I pulled over somewhere to actually pee. I didn't even go in. Pulled back out, and I look in my rearview mirror, and I see lights, and it's like 3 cars back, right?
Oh,
so I'm like,
fuck. So you're hoping it's not you.
Oh, I'm thinking it. It's not me.
Yeah.
I go, I didn't do anything. I'm not even going, right? I'm going 55.
Right.
Yeah. Well.
Backwards. No, just kidding.
Yeah. The last one pulls over. The next one pulls over. The one behind me pulls over, and the lights are in my rearview mirror, and I'm like, this is not good. Right, but my ego is so big, I don't even think this guy's going to ask me to get out of the car because I'm protected where I'm from.
At this place, you weren't, though, right?
No. Okay. No. All I could think of was the guy from the Andy Griffith Show.
Oh,
Barney Fife?
Yes, he's the guy that pulled. He was a great, nice guy.
You better get out of the car.
Yeah.
Well, Don Knotts.
Right.
Played by Don
So
Knotts.
He takes my insurance and everything and all that. And
well, did he tell you why he pulled you over?
I have one headlight.
Oh, well,
oh,
that could
you
be a problem.
Gotta be kidding me.
Oh, no.
A rookie mistake, dude.
Well, hey, right? I'm not taking any hints from the higher power. So the higher power says, you're not hearing me, bro. Let me help you out a little bit. I'm going to have you arrested for a Class C felony of cocaine, a DUI, possession of marijuana with Little League baseball equipment in my trunk.
Oh my God. That's not a good look.
Let me clarify the Little League baseball stuff, though, because this is one thing I always talk about. I don't know how I did it. My partying usually started at 9 o'clock at night and went till wee hours of the morning. I mean, I coached kids from 5 to 22, you know, from T-ball, girls and boys, summer college, you know, all the way through varsity high school. Yeah, so I get, just to roll back, I get around, you know, then he asked me to get out of the car. Well, I was driving a Neon that had a plastic console that you could slot. I could have taken it and slid it right down there, but my ego was so big, he wasn't even going to ask me to get out of the car because I'm mentally invincible.
Of course.
That's what I am. Right? That's who I was.
So that was a wake-up call.
That was a deterrent. It wasn't really a wake-up call.
All right, so you go to jail.
No, I don't go to jail.
What?
No. Wow. Come on, man.
He didn't take you down and book you?
Oh, I went to jail there, yeah.
Oh, okay. So he takes you down and books you, you get a lawyer.
He takes me down, books me, get the lawyer. Actually, I was in a cell, and as God would have it, there was a payphone outside of my cell.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in there, and they let me make, the night before, I'm not kidding you, 5 phone calls, but who's got $7,500 in bail? Everybody's like, what'd you do, murder somebody?
Yeah.
They said I was a flight risk. I'm like, okay, I don't live that far from here. So long story short, they took me down there. I made a bunch of phone calls. Nobody's got that kind of cheese or whatever. At that time of night, at 2:30 in the morning on Saturday. Yeah. Right, so... they let me make a bunch of phone calls. Nobody's got money. I'm in the holding cell. I've never been arrested, right? I'm in the holding cell. I go, okay. So then the guy goes, hey, man, pick up your stuff. You're going to cell block C. And I'm like, I bet the look on my face must have been priceless.
Yeah.
I'm like,
for real?
Well, yeah, these people live here, bro. I'm just here for a minute. I made a mistake.
Right, right. But you couldn't make bail, so.
No, well, no. So long story short,
in general at that point.
I had to sit in there, and then all these people are screaming and singing, and they're giving this young jailer, he's probably 25 years old, right? They're just giving this guy crap. So finally, he comes by me, and I said, hey, I go, is there any chance I can use that payphone? Because I think I can get out of here. Because they were going to hold me till Monday until court.
Yeah.
And he said, I'll tell you what, when I get everybody on the bus to go to church, I'll let you out and use that phone.
Okay.
So again, right, and God would never come into my mouth until I was thrown in here and it changed my life, but we'll get to that part. You know, and it was just, it was insanity, right? So I called my ex-in-laws. They had a $10,000 credit card with nothing on it.
Okay.
And they came down and bailed me out.
No kidding. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
And so you're out of jail.
I am out of jail.
What happened?
That's about, right, and when people say, where's your low point? I'm like, that was the low point. And then I had to get an eval. And then they call me the next day. The guy's like, hey, congratulations, you hit the superfecta. I'm like, what's that? They go, oh, you got weed, cocaine, alcohol, and hydros or whatever.
Oxygen?
Yeah, whatever those are in your system.
Oh, you did?
Well, my back, I did something in my back, yeah, right. So I ate two more of those.
So were they legal, though?
Oh, no.
I mean, were they prescription?
Oh, no. No.
Oh, shit.
I don't do prescription drugs, man.
Self-prescribed.
Yeah. I do somebody else's prescription.
Right.
So what happens as a result of that whole thing?
Long story short, the story is great because I got arrested in April of 2008, I think. Or seven? Oh, seven. And then I didn't go to court until June of 2008. So use your vivid imaginations to extrapolate it to the 100th power because I got a jam in the rest of my career drinking into 13 months. But this is how bad it was, right? I don't realize any of this. I just like to party, is all I think. The night before court, I decided I'm going to get my last hurrah in. So what do? I stay up and drink till about 6:30 in the morning, doing blow. I fall asleep. My court date is at 10. I wake up at 9:30.
Oh, shit.
I'm half in the bag, and then I get to my destination courtroom at 10, you know, driving 1,000 miles
an
hour.
And your attorney's there, right?
He's late because he's always late.
Did they try to
tell you who he is today, but I can't.
Were they trying to knock the charge down for you or plead or whatever you could do? Or
this guy wanted to send me to jail. I mean, I wound up having 9 grams of cocaine on him. It was Class C felony. He wanted to send me to jail. Such and such went down a couple times, had lunch with him. So I show up at the courtroom, and this guy 100% absolutely ridicules me in the courtroom.
Your attorney or the judge?
No, the ADA.
Oh, okay, okay.
And it's a really funny story about that guy later on in the display here. I thought about punching him in the face in the middle of the court. I didn't care at that point. No, yeah, that's helpful.
You would have taught him.
Absolutely. You know who you're dealing with, bro.
That's right.
So what happened?
So long story short, the guy with the big robe says, hey, you're going to do 5 years of probation and you're going to start going to AA. And I'm like,
that sounds pretty acceptable for your situation.
Well,
right?
And for me to be silent for that 3 seconds, that was the look on my face.
Oh, yeah,
really?
Yeah,
right.
That's it?
What? I go, we used to joke about dropping people off and telling you to go to AA, bro. I'm not going anywhere near there.
Yeah.
No shit. You weren't happy? Like, oh my God.
I had my feet and my hands up against the sides of the doors to go in there. I wasn't going in there.
Okay. Wow.
You could pay me 10 grand to go in there, and I would not. I just said that to my sponsor. I go, I wouldn't have walked through that door.
Really?
No.
But it sounds like you don't have much of a choice.
And then when I did walk through the door, all right, being the good addict alcoholic that we are, I'm like, all right, I got a grand in my pocket. Where's the dude with the answer key? Right? I want to check the boxes and get off probation and get the hell out of here and go back to my life.
Okay, so at this point, the court is ordering you to go to rehab, 5 years probation, but you don't want to stop.
No.
You have no thoughts of stopping.
No.
You're like, look, I'll do what you tell me to do, and I'm going to put as little into it as possible.
Absolutely.
I just want to get out of the way.
Exactly.
So what happened? What was your rehab experience like?
Well, it was funny because I went to a minimum one, failed the urine screen there, then went to a medium one, then failed the urine screen there.
Now, are you doing outpatient?
I did one night a week at a place downtown, then I did 3 days a week at another place downtown, and then I wound up going to, this is how much I didn't know about anything, right? You're going to laugh. I wound up going to Tully Hill for 3 weeks of inpatient. Well, they called me and they said, hey, we got a bed for you. And I'm like, hey, with all due respect, I go, I'm an accountant and we're in the middle of closing. I go, is there any chance I could come in Monday? They laughed at me when I told
them. What?
They're like, no, that's not how it works, bro.
Fuck you. Stay out there.
Yeah. So that's the answer I should have gotten. I would have run with that.
Yeah. So
did
you cave and go?
Oh, I had to go. Oh,
okay. So it's court ordered at this point.
Yeah, I was not doing well in my...
Right, so you couldn't be trusted to do outpatient. They're going to lock you in.
Yeah,
so
they needed to.
So you go to the rehab, and what happens there?
There was a lot of God stuff on the wall, and I'm like, oh, my God, I got to get out of here.
Yeah, okay. So you weren't...
It was bad.
You got to go to this rehab, but you're still not buying in, right?
No! Okay. I'm here to check the box.
Okay.
I'm checker. So, plus, I grew up Greek Orthodox, so.
Yeah.
I was a little sour about anything that had the G-O-D word in it.
All right. So what happens in rehab?
Nothing. The craziest thing is this is the truth, man. They said, you're going to need to learn how to pray. I'm like, I'm praying to get out of here.
There you go. There's a start.
Yes. And this is a God's honest truth. I was with my inpatient roommate who was a farmer. So he's up at 4 in the morning, right? So he used to come back at 6:40 to wake me up because you're supposed to be up there. So I had, I had
annoying.
The deal. Yeah, so now I forgot where I was.
Oh, you're in rehab.
Oh, that's right. How did I get here? You're not my beautiful wife. So I just literally sat on the edge of my bed and looked out the window, and there was a moon out there, and I said, I don't know what the heck, but I got to start doing what they're asking me to do here because— I'm not doing so well on my own.
Yeah.
So you had that realization.
When I was looking out that window in Tully Hill going, how did I get here? I'm a professional. You know what I mean? I'm a coach. I'm a high school basketball referee. How did I get here?
Yeah. Yeah.
Alcoholism and addiction.
Yeah.
It was nuts.
Hits everybody from jail to Yale.
And, when they say it's progressive, man, they're not kidding.
Yeah. So you're that... That day, sitting on the edge of the bed, does something happen? Do you have a spiritual experience?
Nope.
You just put it out there. And you're like,
I just said they said try praying before you go to bed, and I'm like, okay, I can do that. No one's going to see me.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I was there to check the box, bro. I had no interest in any of this.
So did you do the whole 28-day or whatever, 30-day, whatever
21
it was? 21
days.
Okay,
21
days.
And I was worried about how I was going to get my driver's license back.
Mm-hmm.
So were you the type that was, you excelled and did everything to be the number one person in there, or did you just kind of hang back in the shadows and just do the minimum?
In the rehab?
Yeah.
I did as little as possible.
Okay.
Did they recognize that?
One person that I still am very close with today, and I don't know if I can say her name with a letter.
I guess.
If you want to.
This lady has been, she was the outpatient supervisor where I was, and her name is Cindy C, and I'm probably going to cry. She's held me accountable when I was good. She held me accountable when I was bad because I didn't know any better.
So she made the difference.
She made a huge difference in my life. I'm going to cry, man.
That's okay.
I'm not kidding you. She's,
okay,
she wasn't very nice about it.
That's perfect.
So when you know me, I need
that's what you need.
That's
right?
Exactly what I need. Don't be nice to me, or this is never going to work.
Because I will manipulate.
Exactly.
Shit. So, did you have a plan when you got out?
I had a relapse prevention plan that I didn't go to any of the stuff for.
Okay, so that didn't work.
So people say, "Did you relapse?" I go, "Well, I wouldn't call it a relapse. I was never in it to begin with."
Yeah, I would call it a continuation after. Taking 21 days off in a box, right? Yeah. So you get out, you immediately go back, right?
Yep.
And what happens from there?
Well, I not immediately go back because I'm on probation, so I got to play the game, right? I got to start playing the...
Can you drink?
No, can't drink, have a driver's license.
Do you have to get your AA paper signed, anything like that? Are you accountable for
it's
that?
It's ironic that you mentioned that because... When I was still, I had to go and I wasn't into anything. I just went. I got it signed. Well, then I started here. This is where it all starts, right? I literally failed a urine screen for probation.
Mm. For alcohol or?
No.
Cocaine?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, all the way. And he looked at me and he said, dude, he goes, do you want to get help or do you want to go to jail? He goes, I don't have any choice but to treat you like everyone else. Mm. And that's when I went back outside and called Cindy and said, hey, I need an eval. And I went back to outpatient, and from that point forward, then I started going, and I started bringing up topics. I didn't know anything, right? I mean, you and I have spoken before, and this is by no means egotistical, but we were talking about intelligence. You know, I said, because I asked you, I came up to you, and I said, dude, you're like a 160 IQ guy. I go, does intelligence make this more difficult for me? And he said, you said, absolutely.
Oh, God,
hell yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because
you're gonna,
not only do you have a good analytical mind,
right,
which can't really recognize a higher power or,
no,
you know, AA, the way these things work is a lot of it's paradoxic, mm-hmm, you know? So you look at something, you'll go, well, that's not going to work for me. And then you try it and it works. You're like, okay, I don't get it. Yeah, it seems like, and AA, we've talked about this before. Most of the people in AA are pretty
above average,
pretty bright. You know what
definitely
I'm saying? But that we get in our own way so easy, and our egos take over,
and then we're just always trying to prove the world wrong,
right? And we're not followers, most of us.
And because we fight so much, we suffer so much.
Yeah, and we overanalyze.
Because life just will
and
win.
And intellect is not going to help you in recovery.
So that was your turning point, you think? When your parole officer said,
yeah, when I failed the urine screen,
and you did
probation,
not want to
well,
go to jail.
I was not going to jail, right?
Right.
That's where
you did
you know,
not have
my
a
ego
love.
Says I'm, you know, Mr. You know, the distribution of happiness man, right? Well, the inside scared boy says I'm not going to jail. I would take myself out before I went to jail. I know
right,
that sounds
the penal experience
chicken
was not
and everything
for you.
Else, but
did,
no,
what,
you know
just
me.
Say?
The penal experience was
no,
not for him.
You
oh,
know
yeah.
me. Well, then look at me, right? I'm going to wind up being someone's date. Which again, I don't know about that either. But you know, to each his own.
But you didn't want to find out.
I didn't. I'm not ready
so
for that.
So you're a little scared, and the system is holding you accountable, and you can't bullshit anymore.
Right.
And you didn't get your way as a little
lonely
kid.
So you get this evaluation, and you start going to outpatient, and you start attending meetings on a regular basis.
Yep.
Do you get a sponsor?
I did.
Do you get a home group?
I did.
Do you get any kind of commitment for service work?
I did, and I miss it because it was kind of taken
careful
away.
Careful when you say that.
Well, it was kind of, there's more of it, but I really enjoyed the Wednesday. I was a member of the Wednesday, Saturday Hilltop group.
Okay. And were you like coffee maker or whatever?
I did the literature and the chips and
okay,
a
nice.
Lot of time.
Yeah, but it gave you, and it kept you accountable.
Oh my God, it kept me accountable. It was awesome.
Yeah, and that's why, you know, a lot of times I know when I first came in and people talked about joining a home group. I was always like, home group? How the hell is this going to happen? And I joined a home group. First thing they did, this is back in the day when I came in, and everybody smoked. And they were like, you're in charge of emptying ashtrays. And I didn't smoke. And I was like, what the fuck? So I emptied all these ashtrays. But it kept me hanging around after the meeting for another 15, 20 minutes.
And those are the things we have to
where
do.
Where I really started getting that meeting after the meeting thing. And it was helpful. And then eventually I started to be – I was also the paper stamper and signer. And you know what people would do a lot of times? They would come in and drop their paper off. And then they kind of filter to the back. And then they kind of leave. And then they come back an hour later to pick their paper up.
Yeah.
Well, after a while, I'm like, fuck this, man. I just wouldn't sign it. I just put it on the table. And the guy goes, I got to need my paper stamped. I go, well, you got to attend the meeting to get your paper stamped.
I chaired a lot. I didn't mean to interrupt, but go ahead.
You would never see them again.
Laughing.
They would not come back to my meeting again. But so, and then eventually they just said, okay, so I've been group secretary for 2 years, so now you're going to do it.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know how to be group secretary.
It wasn't
secretary.
Even a month before I had a coffee cup.
And they're like, you know what? You're already doing it. That's all you got to do. Just you know, open up. Just make sure people are here. Just, you know what I mean? So it was great, and it really got me involved early on and got me into conversations with people I would not usually approach. And I made some connections, and it was great. And you don't hear a lot about that kind of stuff, about making a commitment, about doing service work until, you know, people are, well, I'm a GSR, I'm blah, 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 blah. But early on, it's really good to get something like that. So was that your experience?
I loved it. It was, you know, even setting up the the chairs and everything before. It's the takedown, the conversations before. Yep. And like I said, a lot of times, you know, a lot of people don't like to get speakers. For me, I love it. I mean, it's awesome. I wait till you have, you know, at least a year. But when you stand up in that facility in front of 100 people on a Saturday night, I go, it's a bit different than sharing your story in a 15-person circle.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And and when you get done with that, it's the greatest feeling ever.
Oh, yeah.
It's so you crazy. really did a 180 then.
Oh, yeah. I'm all about it today, bro. So,
now, would you call that a psychic change that you had?
Absolutely.
And did your spirituality come about as a result of that?
Absolutely.
Well, tell us about that.
It's crazy.
Your experience with that.
It's the whole thing is just, it's to me, it's absolutely nuts, right? You got a guy in here that you couldn't have paid to come in this door. Things start... I can relate to some things people are saying once I become a little bit open-minded, right? I got to be willing to be open-minded, right? And if I don't ask for help with all of it, I'm not going to be any of it, right? I have to ask for help for all of that.
And so you really want to get better.
Oh, God, yes. I didn't.
Yeah, I know.
Then, right?
And then you did.
I think maybe a year and a half, I think we were talking on a Saturday, right? I was ready to blow my head off, right? But that's what happens when you disconnect.
Yeah.
Right? When I'm not involved, when I start, you know, the first thing that would go would be the morning readings would go. Oh, I was too busy. I'm working 12 hours a day. Then the prayers go. Then the meeting attendance goes. Right? And you got a levee that's 50 yards long. It's leaking. I can't see it leak. You guys can see it leak. But I don't know. Today, you guys keep teaching me. I go, I know when it's leaking now.
Now, how many years of sobriety did you have when you stopped doing some things, like you say, stop going to meetings or whatever, stop doing the morning readings? Is this something you experienced?
Oh yeah, I went through all that.
And so, but you didn't drink.
No,
but your life got funky.
Yeah, shit started happening.
That happened to me too. I think I had 7 years of sobriety, of heavy involvement, and it started, you know, slowly, imperceptibly dropping off until I was going to one meeting a week, and then I wasn't going to any, and then I was okay, and I didn't want to drink, but over the course of time, my world got real fucked up.
Oh, yeah.
And I didn't want to drink, but I came to a realization one day. I'm like, holy shit, I need to go back to AA because I'm not well and I just don't even know it.
Yeah, the humility goes a little bit each day.
Yeah.
And
so, and when I went back, it was exactly what I needed, you know? So
when you got in, did you get into any step work?
Yeah, with my first sponsor, I worked this. But you know me, you can just tell I'm just a different breed, right? I just am. I did it because it had to be done. People say, you should work on that all the time. I go, geez, the last time I looked in that book, everything said it was in there was suggested. If I'm not drinking tonight, I've been the happiest I've ever been in my life. And I continue to want to do this, right? Because there was no want. I want to do this because the more I do it, the more I'm out of myself. I'm the problem, man. Everywhere I go, there I am. What am I going to do about it? It doesn't matter what the scenario is.
Yeah.
It's everywhere I go. And when I, you know, reaching out and helping somebody else.
Yeah.
It gets me out of me.
It's huge.
Right?
It is.
God's will over self-will. When self-will starts to creep in, and it does.
Preach.
Right? That.
Yep.
I got a friend, he always says, he goes, my higher power's got a great sense of humor. He goes, if I need to learn a lesson, it'll let me run over everything. And it sits back there and laughs at me.
And you know what? For me, if I get stagnant, my higher power always puts a newcomer in my life or a new project like this or, you know, starting a meeting. It's always something to pull me back in. And you're right. It's because I forget about my program and I start to get into me. And given enough time, it will be a disaster. So I know I just gotta keep on the path. I just gotta one day at a time, one foot in front of the other, keep it going, you know. And I've learned that over the course of many years because I didn't know that at first.
The design for living. Thank you for giving it to me because I didn't have one.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
I didn't. When I look at that, I'm like, this is a design for living, and I try to implement all, you know, just try to do the right thing.
How have things changed in your life since you got a hold of, like, real sobriety?
Well, God, a lot of things have happened. I moved around a little bit, right?
Yeah.
Just going, people are going to pay me, then I'm going to go. I mean, not that this is a material thing, but I think this is directly correlated to the program. I mean, I literally doubled my salary after I left the company I was working for in less than 18 months.
Mm-hmm.
that doesn't happen.
So you're saying sobriety being good
There's
to me.
There's no question. Actually, when I got, roll it back, when I got out of rehab, I went back to work. The following month, I was the employee of the month for all of the residential
Nice.
Sector.
So all you had to do is stop using it for a month to be.
Well, right. Right. Instead of putting, you know, putting the beer down and then doing one the length of the windowsill and take a shower and then get in it.
People in AA, once they put down the drink and start working a program, the potential is insane. And you hear about it all the time. And, you know, a lot of people, they'll get sober and they'll get the relationship back and
they'll get
the job back, blah, blah, blah. But also, beyond that, a lot of people move into things that they've never tried to do before. Mm-hmm. They endeavor to do different things and they have success. And they could have had that their whole life. But, I mean, I was a very successful alcoholic for a while. And that's what I wanted to do. That was my pursuit. When that changed, other things started happening in my life, you know. And without a program, I would have just been a guy without a drink. I would have just been in a very unhappy, same person, doing the same dumb shit and chasing whatever I was going to chase. So, you know, that's how in my opinion, that's how it really turns lives around. And when people talk about, and this was a line I talk about a lot, when you come in and they say, go to meetings and, you know, work your program, your life will get better beyond your wildest dreams. I always thought that was complete bullshit. Until I figured out that that's true, because my wildest dreams were garbage when I came in. They were all material, egotistical. And when that changed, that was beyond my wildest dreams, you know, things like honest relationships, feeling good inside, being comfortable in your own skin. You know, that's pretty huge. Because I live in here 24/7, so
actually, it's okay to be wanted around.
Yeah, yeah, that's
right. Not because you're related or you have to be here.
Yeah,
people actually want you.
I just want to put it out there that Mark has, you know, realized his wildest dreams because he gets to do this with me.
That's right.
Well, it's not a bad deal.
No, I mean, the podcast itself is not that great, but doing it with Brett.
Oh, that's
the real highlight.
That's
for
what
me.
It is.
Yeah.
Sweet.
So.
Sure.
Let me ask you this: What would you tell somebody who was contemplating trying to get sober, or somebody who's a newcomer? What would you tell them?
When I share my experience, just quickly, I try to do it briefly. I say, because you know everybody says, "Oh, we got to talk about the first three steps." I go, I said, when I got in here, the only steps I know were the three steps to get the hell out the door.
Yeah,
right. Three steps. I just tell people, I go, look, I go, I got the guy with the black robe who sits above you in the courtroom for a reason, sent me here. I checked all my boxes and I was a free man. I said, I walked out of the Civic Center and I called a friend of mine after I got off probation. It was somebody I ran with, and I called him. I said, hey, there's no oversight committee over me anymore. And he just starts laughing. I go, what's so funny? He goes, if you really want your old life back, he goes, just dial one of the numbers in your phone.
There it is. Yeah.
And that was the end of that.
Yeah.
It was the end of that.
And right? I like that. I like, you know, instead of hitting right on those three steps, because, you know, like you said, a lot of people, heck, they're getting afraid by those first three steps. But just sharing our experience so they can relate and know that they're just like us and we're just like them.
Thank you for reeling me back into where I was
headed.
Well,
I mean, but
that was
true.
A sweet move.
But I definitely agree with that.
No, so I tell people, I go, look, the court threw me in here 14 and a half years later. I'm still here and I don't have to be. Mm-hmm. I go, if that doesn't speak for itself, I don't know what else does.
Heck yes.
Right? Yeah. And I'm nobody different.
Yeah, and my first meeting, I went in voluntarily just because I was in a dark place, but that first meeting changed my life. I didn't stop drinking, but it changed my life in that I sat around and I heard a little bit of my life from every person in there. So if nothing else, I thought, you know what? These are my people, and they're all not drinking. And, you know, I didn't come in to stop drinking. I came in to stop feeling like shit, to stop being depressed and in such a dark place. It took me a while to realize that in order to alleviate that, I had to put the drink down, that I couldn't get sober while I was drinking.
Yeah, so, I distinctly remember, now that you said that, I've been doing this for 14 years and I'm still here. What does that say? I remember somebody saying that, and that hit me hard too, because, you know, they said they're still doing a meeting a day or whatever. And this guy's got 50 years, right? And
yeah.
Alcohol doesn't even come into his mind.
Yeah, and people have said that to me before. They go, like, you got over 30 years.
Yeah.
Like, you go to the meetings just to help other people, right? I go, well, helping other people is a part of it. I go, but I go for me.
Right.
I do. You know, and honestly, if there wasn't a component in it for me, I probably wouldn't go.
Yeah. Well, but, it's lifelong
but
learning, too.
It's not only that I want it, but I need it.
Oh.
I need it.
Yeah,
and when I don't have it, I feel
fucked up. Yeah, I was just going to say, what, right for me, when I go, I'm getting out of me.
Yeah.
That's why I do it.
It is.
Like you say, you go for me. I mean, I guess inadvertently, I go for me, but I go for me to get out of me, so yeah. I guess that's going for me.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
If you got all that.
And so have you sponsored people?
I have. No, I have no one up here.
Okay.
I was in Alabama, South Florida, and Louisiana. That was a lot of fun. You were talking about the sheets to get signed.
Yeah.
I would chair they had a 5:30 meeting every day down in Shreveport, Louisiana, and I would chair. Long story short, there'd be 80 people in there. There'd be 40 of those.
It would be
oh,
sheets.
Wow.
Right. So, and of course, you know me. I'm like, hey, you know, everybody in here who has a sheet, please stand up.
And then 8 people would stand up.
I'm not kidding you. 40 people stood up.
Oh,
oh no.
Yeah.
They all stood up.
Oh.
And I said, if you continue to come back here, I go, these will go away.
Yeah,
yeah, right.
And put it back in my basket.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Everybody's like, oh, my God.
Yeah. See, my experience with the sheets was people wouldn't go to the meeting.
Yeah.
They drop the sheet off and come back and pick it up. Probably go to the bar in between.
Yeah, right.
And I wasn't having it. I'm like, well, don't waste our time, dude.
No, I haven't seen that in a long time.
I
did see it when I first came. Yeah, that was only 2.5 years ago.
They basically stopped doing it. And
yeah.
I don't know
clearly.
If it's because it's like, look, we can't be responsible for this. You know?
My probation officer knew. I stopped getting him signed, but he knew because he deals with us all the time.
Yeah,
he saw
right.
the change and what happened and what I was doing. I would go in there and ask him, dude, come on, make me pee. Come on, come on, come on.
Yeah, please test
Well, then I asked him, right? It was 5 years. I said, you got any early out programs? And he's like, actually, we do. So I got out in 18 months.
Oh, nice.
But he helped save my life, right? I mean,
oh, yeah.
People that, and I got to go back to the courtroom because there's an amends story that is the funniest amends that's ever happened to me.
Oh, let's hear it.
Love that.
Oh, right? God works in mysterious ways, that Fowler. So I referee high school basketball. So I get a Christmas tournament game down at the same area. Mm-hmm. Back to the scene of the crime.
Okay.
So yep. I'm at the high school, and I do my game, and I come up, you know, take a shower, come upstairs, and I'm looking at the roster of the school, and I look down, and I see the assistant district attorney's name with a junior next to it.
Oh, boy.
Oh, man, really?
I'm like, this guy just watched my entire game. So the place we were at actually has good hot dogs, this school, particular
okay.
school. So as God would have it, I go out to get a hot dog and a soda. Who's standing at the hot dog stand?
Now, did he remember you?
No, well.
Because he's had a million of you.
Yeah, hold on. Right?
Okay,
so
yeah.
I'm like, I did. I looked up. I go, you got to be kidding me, right? I just walked up to the guy and I said, excuse me, such and such. I go, do you have any idea who I am? And he said, no. And I said, X amount of years I was in your courtroom and I wanted to punch you in the face because you spoke nothing but the truth about me. And I want you to know that I've changed my life. And if the village of blank needs anything or you need anything, I'm not the same guy I used to be. I'd be more than happy to help out.
Wow.
Nice.
And he looked at me, he said, I told him who I was and I gave him a little bit more of the detail. He shook my hand. He said, no, man, just continue what you're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know what? That's got to be good for him to hear.
Oh, my God.
Well, that doesn't happen every day.
No, and he's doing his job, and, you know, something good came out
of it. Like Christmas, I go down and visit my, he just retired. My probation officer and my defense attorney were in the same area. So every Christmas, I would go down and thank both of them. I gave my probation officer... I always gave my phone number. I said, hey, you got anybody that you think is worth a crap because you deal with a lot of people?
Right. You get my number.
Right. I gave them the number. Nobody ever called me, similar to when we hand our numbers out to newcomers in a meeting.
Yep.
Pick up the phone.
There's your message.
And dial it. If you hit those buttons 10 times, somebody will answer on the other side.
It is so difficult as a newcomer to make that call. But people do it. Not a lot.
Not a lot.
But I've gotten calls from people that say,
I got a sponsor, and he told me I got to start calling people, so you're on my list. I'm like, great.
I always tell them to just call and say you're practicing. You know, that's the least committal thing. Just practicing.
Yeah. Well, you got to. It's tough to get over that, especially early on. It's tough to get over the ego.
Well, especially in a world today where you don't have to talk to people. You just do it on, it's, you know, so it gets worse and worse and worse.
Don't text the people on that list.
Yeah.
That doesn't help us.
No, it really doesn't.
So. Oh, God, no.
Hey, well, we've come to our end of our time, but thanks so much for doing this.
Heck yeah.
This is awesome. I'm glad you guys put this together. It's been a pleasure to listen to. That's how I got started. I was like, I sent Mark a text. I'm like, dude, this thing is awesome.
I would have never thought in 1965 in kindergarten class that I would be sitting here with you 58 years later, sober, both of us, and interviewing you on what is now called a podcast.
Yeah, right. The Glum Lot Podcast, right. Less.
That's all right. Well, we appreciate your time, Joe. And until next time, I'm Mark.
I'm Brett.
Sweet, and I'm Joe.
As we wrap up another episode of the Glum Lot Podcast, we want to extend our heartfelt gratitude to each and every one of you who tuned in today. Navigating the path to recovery from alcohol and other substances is a journey filled with challenges, triumphs, and self-discovery. Remember, we're not affiliated with Alcoholics Anonymous, but we're here to provide a safe space for open conversations about the complexities of recovery. Your stories, courage, and resilience inspire us and our listeners alike. If you or someone you know is on the transformative journey, know that you're not alone. Join us next time as we continue to explore the diverse facets of recovery. Until then, stay strong, stay connected, and remember that each day is a step towards a brighter, sober tomorrow. Thank you for being part of the Glum Lot community.